Good morning, everyone. We'll get started. Welcome to the Formulating a Business Process Approach to Define Public Health Architecture. My name is Wendy Sharber, and I'm the moderator for today. So if you have any questions, need the mic passed around or anything like that, I'm here to help you. First thing I've been told to do is please put your phones on vibrate or off. And if anybody's going to turn their phone off, I want to know who that one person is, because I don't think anybody ever turns their phone off. We will be having our presentation for 90 minutes, and our speakers have told us that they do want to have some time for a full discussion, so be available to participate, and we will also have some short question-answer periods. We are going to first have Vicki Horner up. Sally Klein was not able to attend, so Vicki will be first on our agenda. Just to give you a brief read-through of what we'll be talking about today, we're going to describe the conceptual framework for a business process-driven system architecture based on existing Medicaid framework and propose the application of this framework to the functions of public health programs to promote systems integration and interoperability. It will be followed by a presentation of a real-world application of this approach in the Delaware Division of Public Health. So first is Ms. Vicki Horner, and as she's a senior consultant on health information technology and a HIPAA subject matter expert with a major emphasis on the public sector. Ms. Horner has been active in health information systems, privacy and confidentiality for over 20 years. I'm glad I can say that too. And is involved in policy development and national privacy efforts. She has a strong background in health information and privacy legislations such as HIPAA, FERPA, and 42 CFR .2. Part two, thank you, and in privacy and security concepts, standards, health policies, and practices, all with an emphasis on electronic information. She has extensive experience in health data and systems, including involvement with the impacts of HIT, HIPAA, and other privacy and security legislations on public agencies, including Medicaid, behavioral health, public health, and social service programs. She has participated in national standards efforts such as X12, HL7, the Health Information Technology Standards Panel. She is deeply involved in electronic privacy and security policy, systems, and practice. More recently, her activities have expanded to include involvement in the federal ARRA provisions, HIT funding criteria, and meaningful use definitions, and involvement within the Medicaid EHR incentive program and EHR assessment training and implementation. Ms. Horner, please.
Good morning. We got you all fresh today, huh? Still awake or awake yet? Excellent. Hi to some of you. I see some familiar faces out there for people I've worked with or I'm working with, so it's good to see you all today. I want to talk a little bit about using business process approach in public health, and what I understand is that a number of people are looking at and doing certain things with a little more of that focus by and large anyway. But we'll talk a little bit about trying to come up with perhaps some kind of a national framework that can assist with that. So what I want to do is talk about the business process approach, applying that approach in public health. Why should public health do this? What's in it for public health? Any issues that this brings up or issues that public health has that create some challenges in that, and some next steps we can pursue in order to take this to the next level. I don't have to tell you guys all about the silos in public health, do I? These are actually some real-world things that we found based on emails I saw go across listservs and things like this, and it was so incredible because I said, look, this is a perfect example. And you can just read these quotes here really quickly, and I'm sure you all can relate to them quite well because I'm sure you've had to experience that, where there's different sets of standards, there's a lot of disconnects, not just outside of a public health, but certainly within public health. Program to program, there's different requirements and different standards and different systems that you have to use, different platforms, different data. So this is just the reality of what we've had to work with. Using a business process approach, what you do is look at what you do versus what the program is. So looking at the business process approach takes the perspective that normally when you do a process
for a particular activity, often it's similar, even if you're doing it for a different program, you might be doing it in another sector, you know, or another sector of the health industry. So, but basically you're looking at when you do a certain thing, normally the actual process itself is fairly similar. So the processes are functions and not programs or organizational structure, and when we drill down to a function, it simplifies things and makes a lot of the commonalities a lot more clear. So one of the things that's been done is that Medicaid built a business process framework called the Medicaid Information Technology Architecture, or MITA, which tried to develop this kind of business process structure for Medicaid programs overall as a whole. And by using a set of state focus groups and going through a consensus process, they were able to develop 8 common business areas with 79 common business processes. And this is their first iteration of it, recognizing that businesses and our operations are not static. This is an evolving process. There is some public business health business process approach also underway through Common Ground. And they've been developing business processes, but there has not been this national consensus-based framework put into place at this point in time using that under that project. So what the business process approach does, it should, if we look at it as a framework, it should describe most of the commonality among programs and across states, although there may be a few differences you know, here and there, but by and large, there should be a lot of similarity. So if business processes are standard, then guess what? We could probably make some standard IT modules or functions to correspond to that. Also, it means you get away from saying we have to have a public health IT module. We have to have a module that does this particular activity. So instead of public health case management, we just need a case management module that will do that activity. And so that also makes it simpler for vendors or for someone actually building solutions within a state or a local level to come up with either off-the-shelf systems or develop something that will meet a number of purposes and needs. The modular approach makes it simpler to upgrade, to move away from the silo systems, and hopefully to be able to continue to move forward in the future. You can add modules, you can change modules one by one instead of changing an entire system, and things like that should make it a little more flexible and easier to make modifications and evolve your systems. So if you have a modification, again, state to state, if you have some differences, you should be able to then make those customized changes to your module, but it shouldn't have to be major, which would make it easier. Then I know sometimes people have taken on off-the-shelf systems and made a lot of changes to them in order to make them work for your particular program. For Medicaid, all new requests for MMIS, which is the Medicaid Management Information System, federal IT funding must now follow this type of framework, how it will improve business processes and how it will follow that framework structure in order to get funds. So they have now institutionalized looking at things at a modular level, looking at things on a process basis rather than any type of a programmatic or other sort of system basis. So this is becoming more standardized within federal government and in the state funding streams. MITA is also referenced in the HR incentive program. So there is more structure, using that structure to build a lot of the frameworks now for our interoperable exchange as well. So that's continuing to evolve as we go. And there's a recognition that this makes things simpler and helps give a framework for commonalities across systems and as well as across program areas. So benefits of this approach is that collaboration, analysis, and interoperability among agencies should be simplified. So within public health, certainly we can look at that across programs, but also public health can look at that with Medicaid, for example. So again, there's going to be a case management function in Medicaid, a case management function in public health, reporting functions in Medicaid, reporting functions. And again, will allow us to see commonalities outside of public health arena as well. And as we move toward interoperability, this is going to become more and more important, is that we see the commonalities with other systems and other parts of the health sector. So there's some process similarities in some of these areas, which I mentioned already. A lot of people have fee collection functions, reporting to the federal government functions, collecting data from providers, certainly do that. Many people do that. Managing, tracking state and federal funds and case management approaches. So here's what Medicaid came up with in the first iteration when they went through and came up with the original MIDA framework. These are the business areas of the boxes, and then within each business area is the number of business processes that was underneath each. So you'll see the sectors that they went through, and it's not just the program-specific part, but they also looked at the administrative side of the house. So how do you also administer the program as well as deliver the program? So you'll see that in the operations management and program management parts. Here's an example of one of the business areas, which is member management. And this is the series of business processes under that particular business area. So you have determine eligibility, enroll and disenroll members, manage applicant and member communication, a lot of this which may not apply, of course, in public health, but the bottom one does have some commonalities, so we highlighted that. And this is what that particular business process does, or how they've defined it in Medicaid. So it originates with the agency to identify and notify prospective and current members about programs and services, create and provide linguistically and culturally appropriate information and educational materials, monitor outreach efforts and effectiveness. Member data is analyzed to develop outreach methods and materials and to target specific populations. Now, if you look at that, can you see that if you tweak that a little bit, it would fit public health? It just some term changes and some things like that, it's still pretty much a similar activity. So that's where some of this work can possibly inform or help be reused in the public health sector as well. Now, we also took this particular process and applied it to behavioral health. It's not as well known as MIDA, and it did not go as extensively as MIDA did. MIDA has gone to an approach where they develop models and data frameworks and all sorts of other things here, but we have taken and tried to do the business process piece within behavioral health as well. Now, behavioral health has a little bit more commonality with public health, at least in terms of a little how it delivers services, since it does do some service delivery versus just paying for services. So the administration of the program is a little bit more similar to, and has maybe some more commonalities that public health could examine to see how that works. So they do things also like screening and assessment, case management with a focus on outcomes. And so I wanted to bring that in just to show you those because, like I said, there were some things there that have a little more commonality. And this shows that the process works regardless of the sector you put it in. It just takes time to rework those definitions and those particular processes to meet that particular set of program needs. And while this one in behavioral health is not as fully vetted or utilized as the Medicaid business processes, it is out there. It has been published by CMS, and it's available for use, reuse, or to look at the definitions again and see if any of that would apply to public health. So here's the behavioral health business process areas. And you'll see they're somewhat similar to what was in Medicaid, but a little bit different. So they had client management versus member management, which would be more similar for public health. The care management is a little bit more extensive when we get into behavioral health than it would be under Medicaid, I'm sorry, because Medicaid obviously is mostly, first and foremost, a payer, not so much a manager of care. But behavioral health does do that more. So you'll see in the care management piece, these are the different business processes that were identified under this sector. So you have intake clients, screening and assessment, wait lists, referral placements, admit and enroll clients, coordinate and manage case, manage and monitor client and treatment outcomes, discharge client, treatment plans, goals, methods, and outcomes, discharge planning and aftercare, and prevention. So I selected the screening and assessment piece, and for behavioral health, this is how they define the screening and assessment. It receives data from the client, assesses for certain health and certain behavioral health conditions, lifestyle and living conditions, to determine risk factors, establishes risk categories and hierarchy, severity, level of needs, screens for required fields, edits, verifies information from external sources if available, severity scores and diagnoses, and associates with applicable service needs. And again, I think if you look at this and with some tweaks, you could probably apply some of this to the public health screening and assessments. Yes, people see applicability or some core of this that could be reutilized for that. So for public health, some of the challenges is that public health functions in a number of ways. It performs provider, payer, and public health functions, sometimes within a single program, right? Sometimes you pay for a service, you provide the service, and you also monitor and track or perform surveillance and reporting functions. Provider operations are usually similar to a traditional provider, but usually with a more limited scope and less payment, you know, back and forth in terms of billing processes that occur. Payer operations are fundamentally different from an insurer's, although some billing does occur. And traditional public health activities also are within that, but that's a little different from some of the other sectors of health, like data collection, monitoring, tracking, analysis, and intervention and investigation. So as we know, a lot of the problems with public health is they're often have issues with the categorical funding, and CDC makes it difficult to take and put numerous programs and fund one IT approach to it, or one system, or one solution. So the benefits of a nationally defined set of business processes for public health, it would enable a common understanding of the business of public health. One thing that I find, and I've been in public health for many years, is that public health can't define itself. If somebody ever asks you what public health is, what do you say? I usually hear it from a programmatic side. But if you were to say the big scope of public health, how would you define it? 10 essential functions? There we go down the list. So that might be the part that goes in here. But most of the time, people have a hard time understanding what it is, and we have a hard time communicating to other people on the outside what it is. So this would help that, particularly within the informatics sectors. Providing the common definition both for internal and external use. Stress commonalities across public health programs and help remove the, I call it siloed thinking. So we don't even have just siloed systems. So a lot of times we have to have siloed thinking from many years of working within the scope of a program area. This also helps us, like I said and showed previously, identify commonalities outside of public health. So when you run your program, you're going to run your program much like Medicaid runs its program or somebody else runs its program. You do a lot of internal contracting functions, you know, budgeting, policy and procedure. All those things are going to be very similar on the inside, as well as some of the external work will. And again, the hope is, the bottom line of this is to enable more and better vendor solutions and interoperability within and outside of public health. Public health, the challenge is we have many, many parts. So Medicaid is one monolith, but they're one, right? So they have one system they have to deal with to move forward. Public health, we have to think about all these programs that we need to bring together to then be able to come to the table of the larger interoperability among the rest of the world. So if you were to think about the business process approach, you would consider what business functions are largely universal across local and state public health agencies and across public health programs. A few examples here. Can enough commonality be found or agreed upon to build core definitions that would be applicable throughout the sector? I think the answer is yes. I know some people out there have explored some of that, and you may have your thoughts about that too if you've gone through the process. Would these core definitions enable the development of process-based modular system components that would could facilitate interoperability and meet meaningful use requirements? I think the answer is probably yes. And how do we engage public health agencies and federal support for such a concept? So that's where the challenge lies. Do we have, you know, can we get a good consensus within public health that this is something that we want, and bring about some national process into place that we can actually create this framework and put it all out there for everyone to use? So just from thinking through what public health does, these were a few things we put together to show you what we could see as common business areas for public health. So biosurveillance reporting. Most everybody in public health has some kind of reporting function. Does it matter so much that what you report is differently, that you report different data? The action of reporting something is the same. So that's where we want to look at. Does it need to be program specific to report? You may require different information from different partners, but the reporting, you know, reporting is reporting. Prevention management might be another area, and that might where you put your outreach, you know, or education things. investigation management, when you actually go out and do some kind of field work and investigation, there would be a set of processes associated with that. Intervention management also could be education or some other frontline activities. Research and analytics, obviously public health does a lot of that, a lot of data analysis. Care management, for those services that are actually delivered in the field, that would fall under that area. Program and funding management, of course, that's the internal process of doing the business of public health. So these are just some ideas. These are not anything that have been vetted, carved in stone, just some things to throw out there as generating some thought processes. Now, those were the business areas. Underneath those business areas would be a series of business processes. So if we were to take that reporting management piece, these might be some of the processes underneath that. There's a process to manage data capture coming into the system. There's a process to manage data maintenance, because most of the time in public health, we don't just take the data in, but you actually do some things to either augment the data, validate the data, update the data, you know, set the point in time for the data, do a lot of things with that. Managing, monitoring, and tracking, because there's usually a tracking component that you review that information and then may do something if the data hits a certain threshold. Manage federal data reporting, so on and on. So this is just to give you an idea of how that might work. And again, these are purely theoretical for just for thought processes. So how could this benefit public health? So as I mentioned earlier, the MITA business process is now being included in federal regs. They're mandating this, and in terms of putting high tech into place, the HR incentive program into place, and looking at interoperability. So this is becoming more and more a way of doing business under a lot of the federal requirements. And it's not so much they talk about MITA specifically, but looking at this framework, how do we utilize business processes for our development of technology and solutions rather than programmatic or categorical approaches. If you have standardized data and we put them into these business processes, we can accumulate and analyze that more quickly for more timely response in public health, whether it be for emergency preparedness, biosurveillance, for disease outbreaks, whatever. Certainly, if we have business process approach, it can reduce silos. We can't keep recreating many, many systems. Obviously, we're all being squeezed for dollars, and so the more we can do more with fewer systems or come up with a system that is multi-purpose, flexible, multifunctional, that will be much more manageable and easy to maintain over time. This will help facilitate interoperability within the public health systems we have, as well as with the external health and medical programs we have, enable the connection to health information exchange and interoperability. It facilitates cross-state communications. Obviously, a lot of jurisdictional issues come up over and over within public health, and that could help overcome a lot of the communications part of the issues. Standardized applications can be implemented a lot more quickly, and hopefully people could actually come up with things that would work for public health that you wouldn't have to customize endlessly or create in-house and continue to tweak over and over. And again, that shared development reduces costs and enables reuse and interoperability. Some of the issues for public health and somewhat with the process is that you have to come up to get a national set of business processes. You need to come up with a consensus among 50 plus states. They did this with Medicaid, but it was a lengthy process. It took a while. We did a portion of it in behavioral health, but that's not yet been vetted in quite as extensively, because it does take time and it takes some effort and some funds to do that. Has to be done well, and everybody needs to be at the table and put their 2 cents in, because if it doesn't work for everybody, then it doesn't work at all. It's got to be able to meet everybody's needs. Obviously, categorical funding and categorical requirements are considered a major barrier, but some things could still be done within that in terms of looking at what do we need for this program. Do we have to have a separate system for this program? Can we make a system that will allow us to import all the data into one area, maybe, and then worry about what we do with it after? So we want CDC and other funders to support the process and provide leadership. And, you know, we've already done that. We're different. Not anymore, right? We can't do that anymore. So, next. So, what's next? This this seems to have some traction, both federally and in some other organizations, public health organizations that have been working in the standardization area. So, in fact, I was talking to Seth a little bit earlier today, and we want to continue to talk about this process and see about bringing something to the table that could be set in place as a framework for public health in the U.S. We want to make sure we recruit knowledgeable resources and look to all of you. One of the reasons we want to also talk about is everybody is experimenting right now and bringing some different views and things that you've done to the table. So we want to leave a little time today for you to talk about what you've done or what you've seen and be able to, you know, use those that knowledge pool to make this the best possible process. Advocate for CDC commitment and resources. And look for partnerships with other agencies that may have a little more funds. So certainly with CMS and HRSA to piggyback on and learn from MITA activities and experiences. One of the interesting possibilities for public health right now is the ability to piggyback on the Medicaid EHR incentive program funding, because they have a requirement, state Medicaid's, to help facilitate interoperability and exchanges as part of the SMHP or the state Medicaid health plan that they have to put together to get federal approval for this. And CMS has been pretty expansive and said that if there is some things that will help enable exchange that will help support the Medicaid program, they will be open to looking at funding that. And public health is one area that they have mentioned would be looked at. And so that is being explored, and we're hoping to see that maybe some infrastructure funding can come in, maybe some funding to get public health policies and practices in order, you know, data in a particular place, put an MPI in place, you know, put in the information in a place that you would be able to exchange it from instead of direct from the individual systems. So those are possibilities that are out there, and we want to continue to talk about that. And look at the whole continuum of healthcare. How does public health play in the big picture? You know, public health is not separate, but you're part of the whole continuum of care as we move from wellness, prevention to wellness, to healthcare and treatment, to hospitalization and on down the road. So non-traditional funding, which I just mentioned a minute ago, that's what we think we have to look for. Public health has always been a little bit resource poor, and splitting that money up among many programs has made that even more difficult to continue to move towards some new solutions and coordinated approaches. So looking at those incentive funds, they're required. Public health is a required partner in a lot of these different activities, all the new regs that have come out in high tech, and as they mentioned in the keynote address in the health reform regulations too, there is a number of pieces that public health is named as a player in, and there's funding out there for. I think some of it's going to require public health to be creative, to be kind of quick to the table, be able to get yourself at the table and be able to put some thoughts forward so that other people can see the benefits of that and look at funding that as part of meeting the bigger picture of interoperability and exchange on the national level. So certainly there's places to look for funding, but we have to be nimble and we have to be quick and we have to be watching for those opportunities to come by. So these are some of the things we're looking at maybe under non-traditional funding is, can you get funds to install a certified EHR product in your house or develop and certify your own in-house system? Some public health entities, if you qualify at the local level, at the clinic level, might qualify for the Medicaid EHR incentive program, and you could get money to install something. So it wouldn't apply to everybody, but some might meet those criteria and have the ability to get EHR funding. There might be funding to develop interfaces and connections with an HIE, money to develop detailed data sharing policies for exchange purposes, because public health is always so really bad at being able to say when you can exchange data for who and under what circumstances. Bad at being able to have that codified in a way that's understandable, because a lot of times people have no idea what information can be exchanged when. Standardize and synchronize data for common usability. Put that data into some kind of coding structure, because a lot of the data is still free text or non-standard coding. Develop a data exchange warehouse. Go crazy. Think of whatever else you can think of that might be able to be support interoperability at the public health end. And just get started. So I included a lot of resources here so you could look at the Medicaid. Medicaid one gets a little overwhelming, but there is a lot of information there under the MIDA architecture process. The behavioral health piece is also out there for looking at. Common Ground, they also will have a talk later on this week, so take a look if you want to see those. Kathleen will be working with that group, so see her if you want to figure out. I can't remember when you're exactly where you're at. Wednesday afternoon. And then the incentive programs at CMS are out there, too, to see if you might qualify for any of that. And these are all going to be available, I believe, through the, then they say after the fact, we'll be able to tap in and be able to get our resources out there. So you should have access to everything once post-conference, not during conference. But if you have any questions, please see me. Oops, I went backwards. Okay, so any questions about that concept? I think some of it's floated around enough that most people have an idea, but if there's anything that's not clear about it, let me know, because then we'll turn it over to Marcy to give you a real-world example. Fine? Everybody's clear? I know them.
Thank you.
Oh, I didn't want to go real quick. Let me look. One thing I did quick. Thank you.
I'd like to introduce our next speaker, and it is Marcy Paracaza. And Marcy is currently a State Health Information Technology Coordinator and Chief of the Bureau of Information Management Services for the State of Delaware Division of Public Health. She has experience over 25 years. Oh, my goodness, we have even more experience at the table, working as an information technology professional in both the public and private sector. Ms. Paracaza is currently responsible for IT planning, health IT activities, strategic direction, coordination, budget and expenditure approval, technology procurement and management of all division of public health IT assets. As an IT consultant, Ms. Paracaza's roles have included senior technical architecture, business process engineer, database designer, project manager, and training facilitator. She's implemented centralized network environments, help desk organizations, and project offices. Ms. Paracaza has received the Malcolm Baldridge Award for Quality Initiative and has participated in the training and implementation of Capability Maturity Module process. She is a Mid-Atlanta Health Leadership Scholarship and a recipient of the American Medical Information Association's Public Health Informatics 10x10 program. Ms. Paracaza is the president of the National Association for Public Health Information, a member of the board of the Public Health Data Standards Consortium, and on the advisory board of the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine Applied Informatics program. Ms. Paracaza received her master's in information technology from the University of Maryland. Thank you, Marcy.
Boy, the bio sounds really great. I am just a person that worked in IT my entire life and wanted to quasi-retire at the beach. And that's how I got to be part of public health. So, in fact, I have a slide in here, which... There we go. The next slide is something that I put in here the very first time I spoke at one of these conferences, and it's kind of like my guiding template and my mantra that I tell my staff and I tell programs, and although they don't want to hear it, I will continue to say it. We are more similar than different. And Vicki talked about it, how programs will say, but our stuff is different. And the clinics will sit there and say, the way I run my clinic is much different than the way that you run your clinic. And it's really hard for an outsider to come in, especially an IT person, and say, no, you're not. And then they start arguing, yes, we are. Well, we give blood tests, and we use the left arm, and they use the right arm. And it doesn't matter what you say. They are convinced that what they do is different. And this is where what Vicki's talking about, we need to have a process-driven, similar approach. And I'm going to take you through just a few slides and talk about some of the successes we've had in Delaware because we're pushing that. And I'm not going to tell you it's easy. One of the best things I have is a supervisor that knows nothing about IT, so he trusts me. And his most important job is every time I get shot at, knifed, whatever you would call it, he sits there and he pulls me up and says, go back out there. And having that support to be able to implement change and implement change that can move public health into the 20th century, let alone the 21st, is what we need. So this first slide, I put this in here about 6 years ago. And people weren't really talking about interoperability in silos because it was just public health. Hey, you know, I got my funding here. I developed this. Why do you need to see my data? Because it was program-centric as opposed to client-centric. People didn't care that that poor little mother that went to the WIC office and then went to get food stamps and then went and had a well baby care and then also went to one of the other clinics had to give their demographic information and fill out a piece of paper maybe six times in one day. The clinic, the programs didn't really, it's not that they didn't care about the people, they did, but they didn't care that they had to do the demographics. So then think about what our demographic databases look like if we ever wanted to merge them. As the day went on, Avenue became Av. Cities, Wilmington became Will. And you know what? For that data entry clerk, that it was just after lunch and they were a little tired, they spelled things wrong. So now, one person's in there at least 20 times. So when they go to a clinic as a new patient, they're not really new, we can't find them one there, so let's create another identifier. Everybody knows it. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. So I kind of keep this in here to remind us that public health really is a collection of silos, and it is our job through the study of informatics to say this needs to stop because we are more similar than we are different. So I'm sure if you look at this, you'll find yourself. This is public health. We have a vital statistics group. We have a WIC group. We have newborn screening. We have now public health preparedness, which in some ways, thank God, because they're the only ones with money. We have an office of drinking water. And what's really interesting, when I go to meetings with our office of drinking water staff and they write minutes, they put a office of drinking water, you know, Alice, John, whatever, public health. And then they put the administrators and the managers. So even for minutes, they keep themselves separate from public health because they don't see how they're part of it, just that that's just who they report to. But, you know, since they are funded by the EPA, they're different. But they're not. So I have given this little slide to all the section chiefs in public health over and over and over again because repeating what I have to say gives me a chance for them to understand. And I would look at them and say, I'm sorry, but you're not going to have 20 different case management systems. You all do case management. The text that's in there might be different, but the fact that you see a person, you collect the information, then you pull it up for history is the same thing across the organization. So really, what public health is an organization that collects demographics and then hopefully uses that for statistical reporting. We have grant management. We have an alerting notification. It could be for lots of things, whether it's rabies, whether it's a chemical spill. Guess what? You have email addresses, you have a message, you send it. It's not different. Sending that message is what's difficult. I'll go and I'll do it, and the next thing you know, I have people screaming and yelling. I had someone change a grant to say that they needed to connect to a health information exchange, as that had to be a priority. You would think I asked to take their firstborn children. But it's that continuous message. No, you have to stop being a silo. And it's going to take the people that are here to move that vision along by having things like the MITA approach to help us prove that what they do will continue to be done. It just will be able to reuse things. So this is the vision that I put together for my public health, which should be everybody else's public health, because guess what? I'm just like you. I might have a couple different programs, but what I'm doing is what you're doing, and I'll give a brief overview of this. I don't have a pointer, but this top circle tried to show that all of our clinics, and let me tell you, clinics are the most difficult ones to sit there and say, hey, what you do is the same, so why don't we put in one system that you can share? They do TB, well, baby care. We also have clinics in our schools. We have dental clinics. We do family planning. And the one that I circled the darkest was the first one I attacked was that we called it, it's our child health clinical information system. Bottom line, it's for billing. It fails miserably because two things, and they're both human nature. We have an identifier that is used for a person that gets a service in the state of Delaware, and it should be the same thing that's used each time. Well, we have a lot of names that are similar, and when the list comes up to say, oh, this is a match, it might be 10 or 11 down on the bottom, so it's easier for the person to say, oh, what the heck, I'll just create a new one. So now Jane Smith has 11 identifiers on there. Which one is she? And it's a manual process later on down the road to merge them all together and take those 11 of them and make them one. The other thing is, since the people that are working in the clinics really don't care if they get paid or not, they don't usually pick the correct ICD-9 code because it doesn't matter. So if we're talking about creating standards and we're talking about creating vocabulary, what are we going to do to make sure that everybody's using the same standards and vocabulary? Because human nature doesn't bother them any. They don't get paid. It doesn't matter. There's a grant just around the corner. So we put these in there, and then the second level of things where I had schedule appointments, billing, case management, records management, that's where I tried to show them these are the processes that every one of those clinics in the darker circle do. And when you put it that simply, everybody found themselves in it. It was a little uncomfortable because all of a sudden their specialness went away. But it also then gave them an idea of maybe we can work together and actually share funds. Because wouldn't it be nice if we could afford 8 case management systems, maybe we can build a really good one and use some of that extra money to build something else. Now, I mentioned before the Office of Drinking Water. You know, they're really special because, you know, they get to wear really cool clothes and go out there and check out wells. And then there's the food permitting people that get to go out to all the restaurants. They're not part of the clinics. They're not really part of public health. That's what they think. I put them out on the side. Where it says environmental health, ORC, ODW, because we should be able to start looking at what they do compared to the results that we're getting in the clinics. Isn't it interesting? We're seeing a lot of people coming into our clinics with stomach aches. Then maybe we can compare that demographic information with the demographic information that our Office of Drinking Water had with wells that are having a high level of some type of chemical. Well, we can't do it now other than through a phone call, and usually the information is just a couple months behind in putting it into a system. And one system is run by the CDC, and one system is run by the EPA, and they all use different platforms, and there was never a thought of making them interoperable. Well, if we create this data store, we can pull all that information together, and our really talented epidemiologists will now actually have information that they can start pulling together, whether it be through a zip code or a time period, or even just now maybe we can have just one Jane Smith, and it's looking at things like that. So all of a sudden they saw themselves in there. Now we have another issue. At the bottom you see just some of our registries, our immunization, our cancer, diabetes. These folks, what they do is really important. They're keeping information. They keep lists. But they don't do anything with those lists except for when they report to the grant person. Now, they complain bitterly that the clinics don't update those lists fast enough. It might take 3 months for our clinics to update that immunization registry. So, and then our clinics will say, well, we can't get the information for the immunization registry when we want to see a patient. Well, if you connect those immunization registries and you make them the foundation, all of a sudden the clinics and your registry programs are working together. Hey, I'll send you my stuff electronically so you'll have it fast, but then when I do a query, I need you to send me my stuff right away and I want a true good history. All of a sudden it can happen. How? Right on the end where I had Rhapsody HL7 mapping, I think 4 years ago at this Finn conference, they were talking about how public health could get a really good deal on getting Rhapsody. I'm like, well, we have no money. I'll take a good deal. So we did use Rhapsody to create a communication portal. And at this point, whether people like it or not, they must use Rhapsody. The Rhapsody gave us a really good opportunity also, because on the outside of the box, it says DIM. That stands for the Delaware Health Information Network. That's our state's HIE. We have been sharing surveillance data with them for at least 4 years now. And we do it through our Rhapsody server. And any time that we want to share information with our health information exchange, they must use our Rhapsody server. And now, anytime we have a program, you'll see at the bottom it says LIMS, that's our Laboratory Information Management System. We, with one of the grants, just got an upgrade to HL7, and they're going to send their data through Rhapsody, and eventually we'll be sending it to DIN so that we can have lab reportables for what our lab does. And we do a lot of STD testing. Now, we're small. One reason we're able to do this is Delaware is tiny. And you'll hear these things of, we were the first statewide health information exchange. Yeah, we've got three counties. And not to take away from the hard work, we still had all the hard work, but we have three counties. And we have 75% of the hospitals as part of our health information exchange, which means we have all but two connected. So, I just want to make it really understandable to folks that we could do it because we don't have state and local. We have a state-level public health. We have a smaller community of providers. However, everything that we're doing is scalable. And I think the most important thing to take back is, besides we are more similar than different, is the competition isn't in the data for when you talk to your hospitals or your providers. Their competitive edge is the service they perform. It's what they do with the data. So you start telling people that and within your programs, hey, you can still be the best TB and your TB group can be better than the HIV group. We're not going to change that. But what we're going to do is we're going to make sure that your data is available. So how do we do that? Again, this is just a bigger picture of how we made interoperability the key focus of what we're doing in the Delaware Division of Public Health. To the right, I just put some of our applications. We have our LED application that is using our Rhapsody server for helps. I'm sure some of you have heard of that. Our LIMS is going to be using our HIE to send all of its information to the CDC for reportables. We have our surveillance data that is going into our NEDS-based system, and we have surveillance data that is coming from our health information exchange. We have the chief complaint data that we're getting from our emergency rooms. We are working on getting the immunization from our health information exchange. And for those providers that cannot or will not be part of the health information exchange, we will accept HL7 messages through our Rhapsody server to our IIS. We are talking about bringing our cancer group on, our newborn screening, and we just successfully implemented our EMR in the first phase. And all that information will be using our Rhapsody exchange, which is, if we go towards the left, I think it's the left for you, that's what our communication mapper is. It is able to take a flat file. It can take a 2.3 point whatever HL7 message and consume it and make it into a 2.5 point whatever. So we actually had our version of Hello World, where we had our EMR send an immunization message through our Rhapsody server and send it to our new immunization system, which is going live in, should be like any week now. Should have been a month ago, but we all know what happens with project dates. So we try to tell our providers they have to use our health information exchange. As the IT director, the last thing I want to do is have 500 people trying to come into me at one time because, hey, if it fails, I don't have the staff to go search out which one of the 500 failed and why. A health information exchange is really helpful to me because I got one point of failure, which, yeah, it could be bad. I get no data, but it could also be good because I call one person and say, fix it. So it's a health information exchange is not in competition with public health. It really can help public health. So eventually, we are a small state. And in the summertime, most of the people that are in our state, especially where I live, are from somewhere else. The little beach town I'm in is called the nation's summer capital because everyone from D.C. owns a home there. Well, if they get sick, we also have a little drinking area. So when they get, have that little hangover thing and might show up in the hospital, all their records are in their D.C. health information exchange. So it would be really good if we could access that. So we're hoping that will work, and as we continue with this idea of network of networks, we should all be able to do that. There's another project going on, which I kind of think of as in competition to the Health Information Exchange. That's what the labs are working on. I think they're calling it FLIP or Phyllis, or I forget which name it is now, which really shouldn't be going parallel to the Health Information Exchange. Hopefully one day it will work with it, but we have to be part of it. So we have labs that will be coming through FLIP, and we're going to get that through our Health Information Exchange eventually. As I said, we have 75% of the hospitals, which means we have three hospital systems, which is five hospitals that are connected, and they go through our Health Information Exchange. And the hospitals are all working on their EMRs, and their providers have EMRs, and they are going through the hospitals and then coming in to us. This works. It's been working. And the one thing about being the IT director in a small state is I'm the one that gets to say yes or no. That's helpful. There's not a lot of bureaucracy. And like I said, my boss doesn't have an IT background. I keep him informed, and he supports me. So you've got to find someone to support you. Okay. How did we make it happen for an EMR and getting our customers to understand that they're more similar than different? Again, wasn't easy. I'm not trying to sugarcoat this. But we sat with them, and I started up an EMR work group. And I asked them, give me a workflow of what you do. Now, everything that they do is linear. They don't understand that, yeah, this is step one, step two, step three, but you're kind of repeating them. So after we got all of the work lists, because we said, tell us what you do like you were a robot, I sat down and I looked at them and said, you know what? I could categorize them into processes. And if you look at these, they have the external providers, that's the square, and the fiscal entities, which is another square, because one thing that came out, these folks don't care about billing. And I talked to my billing folks. 75% of the records that they got from the clinic to bill were inaccurate or incomplete. So the time that they spent looking up the eligibility for these 75% of the records could have been spent chasing down the money that we could have had. And then public health may not be quite as poor. So the first thing on there was like, okay, we're going to make sure that the only records that go to billing are accurate and eligible, which means we have to change the process somewhere else. So I can just pick one of them. This one in the middle underneath the user. Send appointment letters, verify appointments, schedule next appointment, send letters of referral, update demographics and insurance. Do you think every clinic does that? Whether it's the person that you first see or the person that you see at the end, it's the same process. So kind of a little ego busting, but everybody could find themselves on it. So using old-fashioned IT, and again, I know that these things can be done better. I used to do them perfectly in the 1980s, but you know what? Nowadays, this is the back of a cocktail napkin. We took their ideas, and we put them into repeatable process, easy-to-understand vocabulary. We have a process of setting up the appointments, and the appointments is where the person gives out referral letters because they're going to say, I'm going to make an appointment for you with another provider. We have client eligibility. That's the key thing for cutting down on the 75% of the bad records that go to our billing folks. We did managing of a case, record archiving, providing service. And when people looked at that, every single clinic actually found themselves into it. I bet you every single public health clinic found themselves in this picture. We had a lot of JAD sessions. We asked a lot of questions. So we didn't create this in a vacuum. Now, what I just did here is I just took one of the bubbles and we broke it down with them. I don't even know which one this is. You can see at the top our electronic medical record, electronic health record. That was that big data store I had a couple slides ago. We want everything to go there so that information is available to everyone, which means it has to be standardized. Everybody has to use the same codes, the same format, and then we can all share it. So actually, this is the billing process. Workflow approval of all, and I will underscore, eligible claims. That means that ICD-9 code has to be correct. If they don't use the right ICD-9 code, it can't go to billing. And that's going to start causing a problem because people's workflow aren't going to be completed, and their supervisors are going to start saying, how come your records aren't going to billing? It makes it easy. And IT-wise, eligible just means we check against the ICD-9 code. They can't make it up anymore. So you can just see then we go, like, if it's eligible, if we upload it, when it says multiple sources, doesn't really matter, but it could be going to a supervisor so they know what's going on, going to our fiscal office so they can process things, maybe even going to the state's financial system so that we can capture money coming in. Because I know we get phone calls for a lot of reports that we aren't prepared for until we get that phone call. And we want to get out of that process and have the reports ready to go. So anytime you want it, you can run it. Okay? This square here where I have EDS, Unison, DPCI, Medicare, I'm sure you all have the same thing. They're our third-party providers. They do most of the billing for us because we're not a billing company. We're public health. But we need to make sure they can bill for us. So I see this as the same business process for billing that every single public health organization has, because I'll tell you right now, it's the same billing process that every one of my clinics should be doing. And we'll be able to, I hate to use the word force, but I'm really jet lagged, so I can't come up with a better one now. This is what they're going to be forced to do because the technology is going to require that through a set of edits. Come on. There we go. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about how doing this has made Delaware successful. You'll hear this stuff, and again, I say this with just a little bit of a chuckle. We were the very first statewide health information exchange, but there's also a lot of pride in that because we did work together. We stuck hospitals in a room, and they had to come up and agree to standards, and that's not easy when you get all the CIOs in a room. So we may not have had as many, so the door locking wasn't as long, but it still wasn't easy. But they did come out of there, and they did agree that their competition is not in their data, so they all agree to standard formats. And along with that, public health, I came up with a statement of work that said, you're going to send a syndromic surveillance, and it's going to look like this. Now, so we've been getting syndromic surveillance. It's really nice during the swine flu epidemic. Was that about 2 years ago? Three? We were able to get reports a lot faster to see what was going on. One of our colleges had an outbreak, the University of Delaware, and we were able to get the information that was going from our largest hospital, Christiana Care, because that's where the students were going. We were able to get information pretty fast. Now, our reportable labs, that's an interesting one that I want everyone to remember when you're working with the Health Information Exchange. We gave them a statement of work. They said that they could give us information, and they haven't. And it's been 4 years, and we will not sign off because while it's electronic, it doesn't have the provider ordering provider's information. And without that, the epidemiologists, they can't start doing follow-up for a case. So it's really important that public health knows what they need, standardizes it, and don't let yourselves get bullied. So we will continue to do things manually until we can get the information that the EPI needs. And the best part of that is now the EPIs know that the IT folks are looking out for them because we understand that it's not just about automating things. It's automating the way that you capture data so that the data can be used in a very meaningful way. So immunizations is next up. We have a brand new IIS like a lot of other, I'm sure public health groups did because of, was it the ARRA or the ACA that you had to spend that money really fast? But we use some of that immunization money for a really smart way that I want you all to think about. I got my EMR through that because we said interoperability during an outbreak or when we do flu clinics, which is all done by our preparedness folks, we have to set up a flu clinic. We need to do mass appointment scheduling. And what if there's a, when we give 100 shots, we want to automatically be able to give them, have our inventory taken care of. So we're going to make sure that our immunization system can speak electronically to our public health preparedness system. It made sense. We were able to use some of that leftover FIRM money to help us put in an EMR. So if you think about interoperability, that's a way for you to expand your funding, because there are always ways, if it's going to talk to this or that program, then you can usually slip something you need into one of the other grants, and we've been very successful with that. I just got an email this morning from my lab that said, oh, you have $50,000 to spend on the ELC. Like, okay, Epi Lab, there's lots of interoperability things in there will help both groups. And those are the ways that you can start being creative with the funding, because the funding is a barrier, as Vicki said. As the HIT coordinator, I'm responsible for all the state projects that are part of the big HIE grant that our state got. And as soon as I get back, I'm going to be having a meeting with our kids department. They're putting in a customized EMR system, and we're going to have them connect to our HIE. And our behavioral health group, they're going to connect in year four. However, since public health was successful with the EMR, now we're going to have them use that same EMR that we did, because it was originally done for behavioral health. So we're now creating an enterprise EMR, EHR solution that all the state agencies can start using. So we are putting in the standard. You do the same thing as us. Here's the process. Reuse it. And the most successful thing I heard was when we had a group of public health nurses doing the training for our first two EMR clinics, which was TB and sexual reproductive health. They said, oh my God, I could use this same thing for my HIV clinic. They started to see that they didn't have to create something new for every clinic. They could use it. And that was like, you know, like watching a baby walk for the first time. So we do want to work with our Medicaid claims and eligibility folks, because we have to determine if they're eligible. They're doing a lot of work with their MITA assessment, and they're really busy right now with the CMS incentives and attesting everybody. But we are getting a pretty good relationship with that group so that we can start sharing our systems together. Okay, you've heard this a million times, but what I'm telling you is we've done this, and it works. Sharing and repurposing, again, you create that repeatable model and their reusable processes, which you saw in the beginning. That's what we created. That's the message that I have to go out there and say every time I talk, because consistency is what makes you successful. Minimize the connections. People, you don't have to have 20 different people coming into your system if you can have those 20 people go into one system and have that system come to you. And that's what I've done with the communication portal with our Rhapsody server. And enforce the standards, both the communication vocabulary and the use cases. It's HL7 or it's nothing. And we have the backing of all this grant money to make sure that we do that. Infrastructure planning is the interoperability integration. Instead of us talking about it, sit down, look at the vision for your organization, and you'll see it's the same as everybody else's. You want to steal mine? Go ahead. Mine isn't complete, because these were, what can I do to try to get the section chiefs in public health who are, I'm the cancer person, I'm the drinking water person, to sit there and see that, no, they're the public health person. So I just sat down and did these drawings more as a communication tool. But I wrote a strategic plan, and that's where I got a little bit more specific. You can all do that. If you can understand and get others to understand the integration and interoperability for the enterprise, public health with the big P, you can get funding to be shared. We're working on a group just to do enterprise interoperability funding. We're going to have everything set up on how we do it. As an IT person, I can tell you interoperability, but I need the program people and the leadership people to say, if they give us $1 million, while I can make you get the data faster and I can have you share the data, what are you going to do with it? What's your value proposition? I don't want to hear that it's faster. What's your story? Are you going to be able to prevent diseases? Are you going to be able to help someone? Because now you can determine that your diabetes incidence rate is higher in this zip code, which also happens to be a place where there's a shortage of fresh fruit and vegetables. You got to have the story to show what sharing that data is going to do for you. And that's where you got to get the vision for your organization, and you got to get your leadership and management to understand it. But if you do that, it's amazing what we can hear doing public health. I keep doing the wrong thing. Can I get to the next one? Thank you. There you go. So,
Thank you.
Well, yep, sit and pull up that other mic, because we have about 25 minutes that we want to have an active discussion about what you've heard, a brief, if you've had some experience with this, so we can all participate. And before we start, I want to remind you, if you're going to do CE credits, you need to fill out the evaluation form. It'll be posted online a little bit later. And also do the general evaluation for the whole conference, so that they can get a feel for how this is going and things for the future. So if there's somebody that wants to talk, we'll be using a microphone because we are recording.
So questions or stories to share, we'd like to hear your stories too.
A question for Marcy. You know, how have you dealt with the USDA's position on WIC and all the problems associated with that?
Great question. We would like the Department of Ag to take WIC away from public health so we wouldn't have to deal with the problem. It's really tough. Right now, WIC is on the bottom of my list to integrate with everything, but they have been told that we are coming up with a one card for benefits, and they got to play. And if they don't play, then they have to go up and they have to get waivers at the high secretary level. We've also told them if they do not have the HL7 integration, then they're not going to get any of the data. So that kind of scared them. So when they go out for grants, they have within the requirements that it must be interoperable with our, we have something called an MCI, Master Client Index. It must be interoperability with our eligibility system, and it must connect to the demographics in our EMR. So our WIC did something very interesting, which I'm very afraid of, but they are now moving their system over to Maryland. And Maryland will be hosting our Delaware WIC, so I think that we're kind of becoming another county of Maryland. But their consultant is going to have to connect to us. But they are the toughest ones. They do. It's really hard to get them to understand that they're part of public health. So if anyone has a better answer, I'd love to hear it. But right now, it's just threats of, you know, if it fails, it's on your dime, and you have to connect to our public health stuff.
Well, I'd like to commend both speakers for making such a concise justification for why public health needs to embrace these concepts and go forward. I guess I even have to commend Marcy even more for having implemented it on your own without a lot of CDC buy-in or support. And I guess my question has to be, I heard a mention that you're having some discussions with FITPO. This obviously seems like the way to go. It looks like it's the way to save public health a lot of money and avoid a lot of duplication. Money is one of the things that we obviously don't have very much of. So I guess I'd like to hear a little bit more about the degree to which you believe CDC is going to embrace this and implement it through its myriad programs and grants. Seems like a very big deal.
I don't think anything's definitive at this point in time. It's mostly just discussion. That's a topic of conversation, though, at a number of the meetings that have come up. So I think the recognition that this is something that probably needs to be doing is sinking in. But I can't tell you anything about it. There's nothing formal coming out at this point that I know of. I will be participating on the JFIT meeting in a couple of weeks, where we'll be having more discussions around that. In fact, we're going to focus on trying to bring this to the fore about some kind of a common architectural framework. But what the outcome of that will be, I don't know, or how long it will be. But I know that CDC, our company's looking at a lot of the things that are coming out from CDC in terms of bids, bid processes, and more they're framing it in terms of business processes, too. So if that tells you anything, at least it's coming forward in a lot of the contracts that they're putting out for bids. So that's encouraging to me, but as a formal statement, there's nothing yet. And again, the funding issue, I don't know whether they can do anything about that or not. I'm not clear where that comes from, but I get the sense that some of it is legislatively based. So whether they have the capability to decategorize the funding or not, and as most of us recognize, that's part of the problem is that everything is programmatically oriented rather than, and there's not a lot in terms of infrastructure funding that's available. So we're encouraged, but there's nothing I can point to at this point.
Thank you to both speakers this morning. I really enjoy both of your presentations. I do have a question because we keep talking about sharing and reusing information. Is the work that you've done in terms of process definitions, Marcy, is that readily available and downloadable?
I could probably make it so. I mean, I'm doing this stuff because it needed to be done in Delaware. And what's interesting is just on Friday we finally got the announcement is we changed my bureau to the Office of Public Health Informatics. So I've been creating a lot of this information and sharing it just amongst Delaware and just keeping it that way, but that doesn't mean that I can't share the work other places. Because, again, you are right. We're the same thing, and why do the same work? So right now it's all within Delaware. Our firewall is pretty amazing. You would think there's a terrorist sitting in every seat. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I'm sure I could look into ways. And again, anybody can contact me because why do it over again? And especially some of the ways we've been able to get funding is the same type of thing. What's your story? And pull it out. Reuse it. So sure, I will see what I have and share it. As I'm sure that a lot of the programs do, I know... For the immunizations group, they were just at a conference, and all of the people that use that immunization program got together, and they shared their information, and they were talking about working on a grant. So I think some of it is just asking the question.
Also, some of these things have been developed, at least prototypically, through Common Ground, and Kathleen might have a little bit more to say about some of that. There's some information available on those. I don't know to what extent they've defined them in the same way that MITA does, and maybe you can speak to that a little bit.
Can you give her the...
Whether that's, you know, to what extent is it helpful?
Yeah. Well, what you'll get is my interpretation of stuff. So please don't take this as representing specifically any of the organizations that are currently the owners of this. But as I see it, one of the things about it, it's really an extension of Common Ground that the Public Health Informatics Institute has engaged in, which is to more broadly look at business processes that are used by local health departments. And this summer they had two very intensive sessions with local health department people to look at case management and really lay out the business processes. My interpretation of this whole thing is that in the time, you know, if 2003 was the first Finn conference and 2000 was the first NEDS conference, first time I showed up here was for the 2000 NEDS conference. In that time, the one thing that has held true for me is that none of the systems development have ever started at the point of the end user. None of them have ever started with understanding what the work processes are and what the actual work is. So none of the systems developed to this point in time have actually supported work at the point of service. They support reporting, they do all kinds of other things, but at the point of service, they're back in systems. Somebody's manually collecting the information because there's no way that they fit the actual work processes that go on at the local health department level. So one of the things that I've felt for a long time and had lots of conversations over the years with people is that we need to, at some point, stop and create a consensus of being able to describe. I agree completely with Marcy. We are more similar than we are different. But somebody needs to sit down and go through that process with the end users, which are local health departments. And that is, in fact, is in my understanding, what PHII is doing right now. Now, the MITA architecture, the stuff that the Public Health Data Standards Consortium is, are the avenues for taking those identified work processes and turning them into products, terminologies, tools that can be used by developers, vendors, etc. So again, this is just my interpretation of how all these pieces fit together, run through the filter of a local health department person.
I want to just add one quick thing to what you were saying before, because Kathy's talking and reminded me. I think everyone in public health is willing to share what they've done. We don't always have a formal way of doing it, but when I was thinking about an EMR, I called Kathy. She was, and she had both gave me time right before your grandchild was born, and her project manager, and not only did they answer the questions that myself and the project manager had, you sent us a copy of the RFP so we could look at things for business processes. Most stuff in public health is paid for by a grant, which means the states don't own it. So we may not have a formal place for putting things, but I think everybody that's in public health is more than happy to give you the information, and you should do that. I know I use the HITRIC because I'm an HIT coordinator, and I'll be honest, I might get 20 different email notifications, and I can't go there all the time. So we're trying to formalize things, but we haven't come up with an easy way to do it that's concise. So while information's out there, it's not always organized in the best way. We need to just call each other and say, hey, what have you done? Send me your business requirements. And that's what we are making our program people do before they buy anything, because they come up, I just saw this awesome system at a conference. I want to buy it. It's $40,000 or $500,000. And luckily, because we're small, I have to approve all these things. And we make them do the business requirements before they could buy it. That's tough.
Well, and this is where we might want to plug, actually, through the Public Health Data Standards Consortium, we've been building an HIT adoption resource page. And this is the sort of thing we would like to have on there. So if you have things, you can enter them in. You can alert us to them so we can enter them in there. And it's a place where you can search on it and provide and get access to things there. We have put the Common Ground material that I could find is on there. I could put on the Behavioral Health MITA and MITA links too, just so you have reference to it. But that's what we're trying to do, is make it a centralized resource for HIT information that will be helpful and useful to IT, to public health. So we'll have a thing on that, and I don't know that I put the website out, but if you look under the Public Health Data Standards Consortium website, there is a little thing down on the bottom right that says HIT adoption stories, and it should have that information there. And we would love to add your whatever your projects and things to it. We'll try to get some of the material we have on these today, and certainly this conference on that site as well.
Hi. My name is Richard McKay. I'm a certified business process professional. And there's a couple things I want to state. One is, what methodologies and tools did you use to do your business process analysis? And the other is, there are business process associations that probably could help do some of this leveraging across all the organizations and states. Yeah, I may want to talk to you about that.
Well, since you're a professional, you'll probably like take me in the back of the room and smack me. When I worked in IT in the private sector as a consultant, I always use like the Jordan and DeMarco process. That's what I like. And if you look at my little spider diagrams, that's a part of it. Now, when I did these things, this was more of a learning tool for folks because they were stuck. They couldn't, no, I must do this and this, do this, and it's this person and this person. So I just sat there on a whiteboard, and I'll get on a whiteboard and I'll start drawing the connections. And while I know the rules, I don't always play by them for this, because it's more of getting people to be part of the conversation. And then one thing I've learned when I was a very young programmer, and being a techie person, we were so granular that the spider diagrams were gorgeous. But it scared users. So what I did is I did I don't know what the word is that I can say in public, but a version of the Jordan and DeMarco, and I walk people through that. I actually have the level 0, and I have then the level 1.0 and 1.2, where I was able to sit down with various folks and show them the breakdown, and it was very, very successful. And I tried to explain, here's a data store, and this is how you fit in. Being able to have an outsider come in and do business process analysis would be wonderful, because in public health, if you're a consultant, that means you're smarter for some reason. So, and I think this is really the time for, I mean, that this is the time for defining a structured way of figuring out what we do, how we're going to do it, and how we're going to be successful in the future. And I actually got roped into a lot of the MITA meetings with our Medicaid folks because they wanted to include public health. And there's a lot of really good questions, and it brought up a lot of good conversations. So I hope that answered your question.
And I wasn't involved in MITA, so I don't know if they used anything, but I did do the behavioral health one. But what we did, because we had a kind of a short process, we basically leveraged the MITA work for behavioral health, and we took what had already been established and worked through a series of group processes to modify and add on to that. So through just a series of structured facilitated sessions to work through to get the first cut. Basically, I consider the behavioral health one kind of a first cut because it hasn't gone through the full consensus vetting.
Good morning. My name is Joan Braithwaite, and I, like Marcy, am more from a IT background, so I completely understand because I really recently completed a graduate program in the public health informatics. And what I see as being a challenge, and I don't know what you ladies would respond to that, is it seems like there's a training challenge because there's like a silo of public health people and a silo of IT people. And I think a lot of the public health people may not understand some of the processes you just explained. So it seems like they should be like training that's like cross-training to really help to bridge the divide. What do you guys think about that?
Yes, you're absolutely correct. And that's one reason why I was just saying, I used to be the Bureau Information Management Services, and I had technical staff that did network, and then I had business analysts. And we have just changed ourselves to be the Office of Public Health Informatics. And it's going to take some time for people to understand, but that's bringing home the message that the people that are here that understand IT are business analysts, and they also are public health professionals, and they will bridge that gap. And any type of IT software or acquisition has to go through my staff and be approved eventually by myself. It hasn't been an easy road, but it's getting better, because once people start saying, oh my God, this worked, and their success, they then send the message out. So you have to be really patient, and it's business analysts can either be really techy, or they can be people that understand and have the patience. And that's what you have to do, because if you don't try to talk the same language, you're not going to be successful. Kathy wanted to.
Kind of a real world example that brings them together. And I have to explain, I started out as a nurse, so I come to IT from a different direction. But I've been doing it for almost 30 years, so I have a little bit of knowledge. But within IT, there's a structured approach for development and implementation, which involves users. And we take that very, very seriously. And we use a very structured approach with super user groups who are then responsible for working with smaller groups. And ultimately, every single person who's going to be touched by an implementation participates in, at the very least, some of the activities. And the first thing that we do is examine the current work processes to find out if there's any way to improve them before we implement a new system. And at this point, having gone through it, I could say that every single person that works with direct patient care right now in my organization could sit down and draw a small flow chart of their workflow, because they've all been involved in it, and they all know how to do it now. Now, it won't follow any particular structured approach. it won't look like something that somebody else, but they understand how to read them and how to draw them. And so I think built into what are formal IT processes, there are ways in the course of doing that to actually bring people along and have them learn those skills.
Hi, my name is Tony. I am actually a vendor, Advocate Technology Solutions. Just wanted to share with you a success story and also a real-world example of what Kathleen's talking about, because while Marcy was talking and saying that each public health agency thinks that they do something different, even within the same public health department, and within the same division and program, each nurse thinks that they do a different job. So as we sat down and started doing business processes with them and started flow charting with them, and we started seeing similar activities, we started telling them, you guys all do the same thing. You guys go visit the client, you enter an encounter, you enter an assessment, you enter patient demographics, you get a referral. It's all the same. You send referrals. So what we're going to do is create a system that's going to take care of the whole process, and all of your different programs are going to be able to use. So we did this, and we concentrated really on the end user perspective, and that's what we did. We sat down with them. We got groups of super users all the way down, and really design something that they're going to ultimately use so they can get meaningful reports. Because if they're not going to use it, if it's not going to be easy to use, then what type of reports are you going to get? The challenge that we have now is because what happened is they implemented an EMR system that didn't handle their case management. So this big EMR system that they implemented left a big gaping hole. And we made the transition from a workers' comp case management system, that was our previous experience, into this public health case management system. Kathy is our lead advocate nurse technologist, I like to call her. But she really brings a soothing element to the room because I'm coming from an IT perspective. So I talk IT, Kathy talks nurse. So she really is our liaison, you know, and yeah, and so the nurses really like it when Kathy's in the room. They get to talk about their kids, you know, how they're, what's going on in their personal life and things of that nature. And then when it's time to talk business, and I'm like, okay, what do we need to do? And flowcharts and whatnot, right? So, you know, that kind of touches upon your question because we're a team. Every time that we talk to the client, it's always us two. And that gives the a reassurance to the nurse and to the client that she's going to understand all the medical needs that need to be incorporated into the system, and I take those needs and translate them to, you know, technical specifications. So I just wanted to share that with you guys.
Thank you. We have one more question here, and then we can do two more quick ones and still make it to lunch.
Hi, Marcus Cheatham, Lansing, Michigan, also with JFIT. One quick story. We were trying to develop a data system that could exchange data for our smoking cessation services, and so I trained our staff in cooperative requirements development, and we got them to work on describing their business processes, and the whole thing completely failed. They never understood it. It was a total disaster, so I'm really glad the vendors are here because there's definitely a place for people from the outside with those skills. You know, if you came to me, though, I couldn't hire you to do that. We have $0, of course. But obviously working with the national effort to do this, you know, I think that's where the business opportunity is. But that's also where my question is. Vicki made a really impassioned plea for a national process, and there are several going on that are starting to talk to each other now and fuse into one. But in the meantime, we all have to work locally. Locally, we're working on a project of building into our EMR as we roll it out, a case management module. We're trying to use the common ground for that, but we know that's not where it's going to end. So we know we're building something into our system that will have to be supplanted later. So there's really this tension. You've got to get your work done today, but we also have to, you know, build standards that will allow us to integrate the whole vertical public health enterprise, and that's really a struggle. Do you guys have any response to?
We keep trying. We keep pushing because obviously it needs some national leadership for this to happen. So I've been beating this drum for years now. Kathleen knows that. A number of people who've been doing it for a while have been kind of beating this drum with us. And that's why I said I think we're getting some ear finally. But you know, it takes some leadership and direction because none of us can do it by ourselves, and we don't really have like some other areas. You know, our public health associations that are trying to do across public health things are still fairly young, and so we don't always have the support or the leadership or the resources to be able to do that independently. So I think it really needs a little stronger federal focus to get that to happen.
And I'll respond really quickly because I know other people can talk. It's being done successfully. With us, we put in our EMR,
And our BERTA 3 group, which is in a different division, they put in a case management system. Same vendor. They are now, we're writing an MOU, and they are going to change their screens so that we can have our public health nurses use their system and they use ours, dealing with it with security. Like I said, I have in my emails two meetings set up with our kids department and then with our behavioral health and substance abuse. Let alone public health talking to each other. My God, other divisions and other departments never spoke with each other, and we're now talking about an enterprise EHR. They're hearing that the key thing is start small and be successful. Now that they know we actually got the project implemented on budget, they want to become part of it, and they are changing their processes to work with ours. So it is happening. Now, this is four different funding streams, but the requirements in there, like we were talking about for WIC, was if you must do this, you must be HL7, they're all becoming one. So it's just being consistent with that message of you've got to be interoperable, and it works.
Let me just add one quick thing to that. I think that the remarks this morning about doing more with less are very appropriate, and that with systems, this is a really good maybe a way that forces us to go this direction that we haven't had before, because the money's not going to be there. That's your best argument for trying to bring things together this way, so that you have a module that will do this for everybody and this thing, that thing, and that thing, and you won't have to have all these differences because you can't support it anymore. Right. And so hopefully that some of that is the tight economy will also help drive this solution a little faster. As people recognize the value and understand that the resources are going to be more and more limited, I think that it might help refocus attention on it too.
We've come to the end of our session. Thank you very much. Thank you, presenters, and for the participants. Appreciate your comments and things of that nature. Be sure to visit the Interoperability Showcase and the Exhibitor Hall. Our speakers are available if you want to talk with them after this. No. Thank you.